Well, we are back again, and it's only been a week this time. For box office,
should feel top of mind for box office battles with Greg and Eric tonight.
You said what movie should be feel what?
They should feel top of mind. They should not feel like it's been too long since we last went over.
True. Yeah, normally we do like every other week, but this week on Box Office Battles with Greg and Eric, we have gotten to our final four of our second set of battles. So we are pleased to be bringing you the final four tonight, and we will probably need the audience's help tonight, without a doubt, going into this battle. I won't say without a doubt, but I think we may not agree completely on this one.
I was wondering about this. I also think that coming into tonight, I have pretty good idea of where I'm at, and I generally feel like I often know where you're at or coming from. But I also feel like these four movies, if we had the same conversation a month from now, it might be a little different. If we had the same conversation a year from now, it might be different. So I'm interested to see, and I'm not sure, Greg, on one of these two matchups, which way I'm going to vote just yet. You may be able to convince me with your, smart movie talking, where I ought to land on one of these.
Smart movie talking. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you this. First of all, hi, Mike, Florida. He's with us.
Lobanovitz.
He's with us every week. Glad to have him. Glad he's safe from the hurricane. And we may need his help tonight. Like I said, we don't have a guest in the studio to help break a tie. So we'll definitely be going to the audience if we do not agree tonight. So whoever's in the chat, they'll be able to vote. And we want you to make sure you put your comments in the chat as far as the battles go. So let's take a look at the
bracket. We have someone. Greg, I think someone's at the door. Hold on. Guys, you're not going to believe who showed up. It's Cristiano Ronaldo. He's here, and he's going to break the tie for us. Hey, everybody. It's me, international superstar Cristiano Ronaldo, coming to you live from Madrid, where I no longer play soccer, I don't think.
Well, the problem is that we have a live stream. So if they're listening to on the Spotify, then yes, you could pull that off, maybe. But you know what that reminded me of? It reminds me of the dude in Good Morning Vietnam that tries to do the radio when Robin Williams can't do it, and he's going to do impressions, and he goes, "Oh, Frenchie, oh, Lieutenant Steve. Oh, Frenchie, oh, Lieutenant Steve." So, yeah.
No, I definitely knew that I couldn't say, like, here's some random Asian guy.
Yeah, exactly. No, we don't want to.
Help.
Luckily, we don't have a huge following, but the problem is if we ever did get one, so we'd be like a year from now and we've got thousands of viewers, and then somebody plays a clip of you doing a bad Asian accent and we're automatically canceled. So yeah, we don't want to do that, but yes.
And it would be a real surprise to me.
Oh, good Lord. And it's bad enough you did the 9/11 joke a couple weeks ago, so.
That one's still rattling around in your head, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Free.
Yeah. When we did the Spotify edit for that, I'm like, should I take that out?
You should not.
No. That one was fine. It was borderline, but it's there. So, yeah. So, anybody who's in.
Tell me a better 9/11 joke.
I don't have any 9/11 jokes.
Oh, sure. You and the boys out on the golf course, you've had one bourbon too many, and you're telling me no one's ever dropped a... Okay, well...
Yep, no, never had.
All right, fair enough.
But, yeah, so just to say, we've got a few people in chat tonight, so stay with us tonight. We're going to get through these really quick, because what we did the last time, and I thought it worked really well, was when we did the top AFI's top eight movies. We just kind of recapped the movies that we had. We didn't really go over them again, but we kind of decided, hey, tell me what you liked about it and what you didn't like about it. let's debate these two until we get down to the final two and then declare a winner. So let's real quick look at these movies, if we shall. These are our top eight sports comedies of all time. I'll move it over there so we can see it. And this is how where we've gotten over the course of several weeks. And you can see that Major League defeated Kingpin last week in our episode. And we unanimously thought that Major League was the better film, although we both loved Kingpin. Longest Yard narrowly beat White Men Can't Jump in our eyes. We both liked White Men Can't Jump. We just didn't care for the self-destructive characters. And Longest Yard had enough laughs in it to carry it through to the final four. I think we both adored Slapshot at the time. That was the first matchup we did, the 1 versus 8. Nothing wrong with Dodgeball. It's just Slapshot hit a little bit differently. And the only one we can really had a contention on was Caddyshack versus Happy Gilmore. I'm a big Caddyshack fan. I love it. But
I don't remember there being any contention between the two of us for that. And listen, you may want to call it revisionist history. Yes. I don't know. That's been going around lately. But I seem to recall us having a pretty pleasant conversation about those two films.
It was probably the most fun conversation that we've had on this show. But the victor always writes the history. So, yeah, if you say it was a non-contentious, yes. I'll go with that. I do love Caddyshack. I always have. But it did not win. We put it to a fan vote, and Happy Gilmore came through. So this is what we're at for tonight.
I think I know why, honestly, that it didn't win. Because it's an unfunny piece of shit.
Yeah, exactly. I knew that's where I knew exactly where you were going with that. But there's a lot of people who love that film. But we're not going to go down the Caddyshack road.
Yeah, we don't have to do that.
It's not here. What we're going to do is start off with the right side of the bracket, and we're going to debate on Major League versus The Longest Yard.
And this is tough.
I think so. Let's start with Longest Yard. So we can jump back and forth. It really doesn't matter. Longest Yard, we watched and we liked it over White Men Can't Jump. And part of the reason is that for that 70s sports comedy, it was kind of starting to define that genre was actually kind of really getting started in the 70s. I don't remember.
We saw a lot of similarities between The Longest Yard and Slapshot.
For real.
And the way they tackled some pretty intense, gnarly, hairy social issues.
Yeah.
But in a way, like I think we both agreed that sports kind of has this comforting aspect to it in general. And so movies about sports give you a comforting theme to fall back on while you're telling these stories. We loved that, I think, about Longest Yard. That was one of the things it had that maybe we thought White Men Can't Jump was a little ham-handed over.
Yeah.
And not to mention, like you said, the an ensemble cast of just some of the funniest characters, and Burt Reynolds at his absolute performing
peak. Oh yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, that was his prime era, was that early 70s to about the early 80s. After that, he starts to fall off a little bit. Being a Burt Reynolds fan, I remember in the 80s when he stopped doing the comedies and started doing movies like Heat and Stick and I forget all the names, he started doing these action films. And it was sad because this was somebody that when he was in his prime was genuinely funny on screen because he had charisma, and that's what really carries him through the film. And really, as unlikable as his character is, because both movies, what's funny is they feature, you know, self-destructive characters, and they both have kind of a redemption arc, although Woody Harrelson's character in White Men Can't Jump still doesn't really learn his lesson. He goes off and bets money again instead of really learning his lesson. Burt Reynolds goes to prison and in the end learns a lot about himself, about being a part of a team, which he hadn't been before. And what carries it is his ability to, like, he's unlikable in the beginning. In fact, you know, he slaps around his girlfriend, steals her car and wrecks it in the lake and everything like that, and ends up going to prison for that. Very unlikable character, but by early on, his charisma makes you forget about that. You end up rooting for him before the movie even really gets going. When they shave his mustache and they put him in the swamp, you're already rooting for Paul Crewe. It's interesting.
Yeah, he had the he just leapt off of the screen. And if you only know, like I did at the time, Burt Reynolds as kind of a caricature, or you think of the Saturday Night Live skits that they would do with Norm MacDonald as Burt Reynolds. Yeah. And
Turd Ferguson.
Yeah, Turd Ferguson. And that really what kind of shaped my opinion of Burt Reynolds just as an actor, that he was kind of a washed up kind of douchey chode. I don't know. If that's all you know of him, go back and watch some of these 70s kind of highlights of him, because you said it perfectly. The charisma that he has is pretty surprising, especially if that's all you know of him as an actor. And it really did carry the longest yard. The story was great. And it relied a lot on football as a storytelling device and the recruitment of all the players. Well, he's put in the situation kind of under duress, then recruiting the players, and then, as often happens in sports movies, oh no, this team that we put together is terrible. How are we ever going to accomplish our goal? And the training montages, and you meet a bunch of secondary or minor characters that are all funny and or interesting in ways. And there's the underlying themes of injustice. And I just, you know, the whole movie, I was very pleasantly surprised. I wasn't sure. Because movies can quickly feel out of date. And so we're talking about movie that's over 40 years old or 40-ish years old. But it didn't feel out of date. These are themes. These are situations that we're still kind of deal with, that are familiar to us. And so it was just as, I'm sure, moving back then as it was for me watching it for the first time in 2024, as opposed to, I don't know when that movie came out.
74.
Mid-70s. Yeah. So I was really pleasantly surprised by that. It wasn't like watching Gone with the Wind and it obviously feeling very dated. It's a movie made in the 30s about the Civil War era.
Right. Yeah.
And this felt a lot more contemporary than that did.
Well, so I mentioned earlier, like say, 74 was when Longest Yard came out. And I grew up in the 70s and I struggle, you know, motion pictures, you know, especially motion pictures with talking motion pictures, you know, early 30s to now. They've not even been around 100 years. We've not had talking pictures. But I struggle to remember or find a sports comedy like The Longest Yard in the 30s through the 60s. Now, granted, we had the Three Stooges with their football comedies. You had, you know, Abbott and Costello. But most of those sports comedies were geared at a young audience. And I'm not talking about sports movies, because you had Newt Rockne All-American, Pride of the Yankees. I'm talking sports comedies.
Yeah.
And only ones I remember were like the Disney ones, like the Gus with the donkey that kicked field goals. And they were all kind of over the top, meant for kids. Flubber, or, you know, the absent-minded professor, where, you know, Fred McMurray and the basketball team jumps around on the flubber and everything like that. So I struggle to remember. And if the audience has any that they remember from before Longest Yard, then by all means. And what The Longest Yard did that so many films copied, and it works really well, you talked about it, assembling the crew of misfits or the quirky characters, and there were so many, but it's such an easy plot device to bring characters into the movie. Hi, I'm Wrong Way Jones. You know, whatever it is, they do it all the time.
Just Jones going the wrong way again.
Exactly. Yeah. So you get, you know, like in Longest Yard, you get Richard Kiel that plays the lovable giant. You get the psychopath that knows martial arts. And they introduce him in this step-by-step format that we've seen repeated many times. And I struggle to remember that happening before this. You get all of these guys. So
yeah, and it's not even just, you said it's kind of a tried and true plot device. I mean, we see it not just in sports movies, you see it in heist movies, you know, Ocean's 11, you know, things like that, where you put together, you know, they each have a specific thing they do well, and yeah, they each have a flaw that may or may not, you yeah, know, affect yeah, what they're trying to do.
Introducing those characters, and that's it. It's funny, in the heist movies, you son of a bitch, I'm in.
<It's> yeah, always, yeah. Oh, twist my arm.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so that's
I
the
was,
thing.
I was out of the game until you, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, in fact, heist movies may be a category we do down the road here on Box Office Battles. I'm sure we'll get to heist movies. I was thinking yeah, about that the other day. And yeah, it's a similar vein where you've got to assemble the team. You've got your main characters. And so even the opponent of Longest Yard Tonight in the Final Four, Major League, does a similar thing. You yeah, get the main character, Jake, and then you introduce Willie Mays Hayes and all of it, Serrano. And so you get them piece by piece, all of the other teammates. So, yeah, exactly, Mike Flores, I'm back in, you son of a... So, but yeah, so that's yeah, that's kind of how it works in these sports films. But I think it really originated with Longest Yard, because Slapshot came out in 77. And what's interesting about Slapshot, and we'll get to that in a minute, but they don't really have the same type of introducing because the team's already assembled.
Yeah, it felt so, less like that.
Yeah, it didn't feel cliched in that structure. They didn't feel the need. You get to know them organically through the plot. Like each one kind of pops up. And then when the Hansons are introduced, you get, you know, that. But Longest yeah, Yard does a great job, and the characters are so likable, even though they're murderers and probably rapists or whatever.
They're in prison for singing too loud in church, I'm sure, and that's why we love them so much.
Yeah, and so it's funny, though, that, yeah, you end up rooting for this gang of, you know, possible murders, hardened criminals, because it's a maximum security prison in Florida. So, yeah, it's interesting. You end up rooting for them over the law-abiding guards for a reason. And it's because the yeah, characters are built in a sympathetic way. They're built in a funny way. And you don't even want to know what they did on the outside. You just want them to win this game to get some of their humanity back.
Well, you know, there, I'm sure there's a certain subset of the population who have these weird raging justice boners. And so, you know, people are in prison because they deserve to be there, and therefore the treatment that they get while they're in there, you know, big shrug, oh well. I still think, though, that the movie, I think the movie paints the quote unquote law-abiding guards and the warden as corrupt enough to at least level the playing field,
right,
to where you maybe there's no good choice in this, or maybe, you know, you feel, some viewers may feel conflicted about whose side I should be on,
right,
you know, there's the just following orders crowd, you know, and whatever. I didn't have that conflict. I think they, like you said, did a really terrific job of kind of weaving into each of these people's stories a reason to be rooting for either them as an individual or the team as assembled throughout the course of the movie. And we see a lot of reasons
yeah,
to support them through things that happen.
Yeah.
And situations that they're put in or put through.
Well, yeah, exactly. The brutality that the each of the guards exact on the prisoners, the messing around
the
with
scene in the library yes, was really,
yeah.
I mean, it was a turning point in the film, and we discussed that, but it's a real turning point for probably any viewer who was on the fence up to that point immediately, you know, falls to
right,
one specific side. I feel like I'm trying to tiptoe around spoilers, but this movie's been out for
oh yeah,
yeah, you know, yeah, fucking years. So, but that it's such a travesty of racial justice,
right?
That it would be damn near impossible to watch that scene and go, you know, I still think on the whole the guards are the good guys, you know, and then that's done purposefully,
right? Well, they make it fairly clear with the main guard that Knauer that you know hits crew for no reason after he refuses to coach when he tells him not to. And it's just and so they build on that with every single guard enacting some sort of sadistic glee and taking out. So it's kind of funny how a movie can be structured where you can subvert law and order versus criminals and you root for the criminals because of the way that they're painted. So if you take it at face value and you just said, hey, I'm going to do this story about all these rapists and murderers and they get to play the guards and they're going to beat the pants off them in the end without giving any backstory about who's the good guys or bad guys. It could be conflicting, but you know, there's other movies like this. Like I remember Stir Crazy, which is just a great prison movie. And that's another topic we could do, prison movies or prison and, you know, even prison dramas and prison comedies where that the guards weren't really that evil, but it was the fact that the guys were desperate to escape. They were innocent. So you're rooting for Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor and they get involved in the rodeo to try to escape. And so you're rooting for that escape. And they ignore the fact that the one of the guys that are friends with them burned his house down and killed his whole family. The other guy, the big hefty guy, you know, killed his family. But yet they're going to get these guys out too. It's crazy. Yeah. And you end up rooting for them because they paint likable characters. I think The Longest Yard does that. But
we're watching the movie for some suspension of disbelief, for some, you know, knowing that what we're watching isn't real. Would we really, in real, true life, if we were watching a documentary, be rooting for the rapist who killed his whole family to find a way out of prison? Yeah. No, we wouldn't. But this is a product of good writing. And the escapism that we are drawn to movies in the first place for. And so it's okay that I think we shouldn't have any moral dilemma between, well, it feels kind of weird to root for people who have done unspeakable things when that's the way the movie was written. The movie's written for you to,
right.
You don't have to create some sort of moral, you know, issue for yourself. Especially when you're going into a sports comedy,
right?
You know, it might be different when we're watching things like Schindler's List that are about a very real, you know, historical situation that happened. But in this particular sense, it's fine. You don't have to feel weird about it. You're doing what you're being asked to do as an audience member.
Right.
So, you know, I can appreciate that. But the same thing is, and if we can shift gears to Major League,
yes,
is just like you said, we're introduced to characters in a measured way. They're flawed, but they have, they're charismatic or they're, you know, fighting their own battles and they're trying to overcome. They're each overcoming something personally, and they're each overcoming something together as a team. And it's also done really well. I mean, I don't think there was any hesitation to pick Major League over
Kingpin, the bowling movie. So we liked Kingpin a lot, but it's, I think the difference was what is a sports comedy. It was more about the Amish jokes and the sight gags, which are hilarious. But there's a little bit of the bowling in there that's funny, but it wasn't as far as Major League. When you think about a sports comedy, that is like as far as the 80s go, that's the model of a sports comedy.
I'm going to start this line of thought and I may be convinced that I'm wrong, but I wonder if it has partly to do when you put a Farrelly Brothers movie up against anything, or at least certain Farrelly Brothers movies. And I'm talking about Kingpin, Me, Myself, and Irene, Something About Mary. I don't think that we discuss those films, even for people who really like the Farrelly Brothers. We don't talk about those films because the plot is so interesting. or the storytelling itself isn't interesting. It's unique.
Yeah.
That's not what they do well. What they do well is something different than what Major League did well, than what, you know, Slapshot did well, or The Longest Yard did well. And so I think maybe that's why that was such a seemingly easy choice for us, is because, sure, if you put two Farrelly Brother movies against each other, then you've really got to figure out the ins and outs and nuts and bolts of the whole thing. But when you're putting it up against a generally well-crafted movie from a story standpoint, character standpoint, you know, talk about recurring themes that we're all comfortable and familiar with, I just think maybe that's why that was such an easy choice for us. What do you think? Am I off base?
No, not at all.
I feel like I could be convinced I'm wrong.
Well, no, the thing is the Farrelly Brothers are unique films and funny films in their own way. They are a vibe. It is a offbeat, over the top type of slapstick at times, sometimes dry humor, a lot of dry humor that is subtle, just like Randy Quaid saying, oh, you know, look out, everybody, there's a shit cloud coming, run for your lives. That's a funny dry humor type joke, because he takes the fact that there's a shit cloud coming very literally. But it's, you know, the movie's good in that sense, and I think Dumb and Dumber are good that way, but you're right. There's a little bit of character drama in there, but that's not what those movies are there for. You know, Dodgeball, which we had early on, we really like as far as the humor. The visual gags are great. The one-liners are hilarious. But as a overall story, you don't get anything that you're going to hold on to and go, man, I was really rooting for those guys. Yeah, you want them to win, but you could care less. It's about the jokes. So,
and maybe Kingpin beats Dodgeball if that's maybe the matchup.
Yeah.
You know, that is a little more fitting of a matchup. Yeah. That's a little more on equal terms, I think.
Right.
It just, like you said, we liked Kingpin. We laughed and we, you know, had an enjoyable time watching that. And there's memorable characters in that one, too. But it just couldn't overcome the fact that Major League, man, I mean, if you just, like, write down a list of things about sports that you love, or that you're drawn to sports because of A, B, and C.
Right.
I mean, Major League, you can check those boxes off immediately.
Right.
It's just done in such a comforting way. That's the one that I keep coming back to for Major League, is that it's comforting.
Yeah.
Because it isn't particularly challenging.
No.
It's not particularly groundbreaking cinema as cinema as an art, but we're not trying to do AFI's top eight. We already did those.
Right.
We're looking at sports comedies, and it just so perfectly encapsulates, I think, what a sports comedy is supposed to be. What you're expecting when you go see a sports comedy is basically Major League. It's a blueprint for how those movies get made. I bet to today, you know, those movies in the 2000s, the Blades of Glory and the Kicking and Screaming and some of those off. I mean, my gosh, you could probably lay the two on top of each other and see similarities, because I feel like Major League set a standard and a mold that can be followed, and you can have a successful movie on your hands if you'll just do what Major League did. You won't do it as well as they did it, but you can follow that to some amount of success.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Major League is one of those things that they don't even try to get really over the top and slapsticky. Even when they go silly, it's not that silly. So you get this almost grounded in realism, where Blades of Glory and other movies like that, they go push the envelope a little bit on the realism part of it. So Major League, and I think that was typical of like some of the 80s and 90s sports comedies, like A League of Their Own, like The Sandlot, that we didn't put into this because they weren't kind of R-rated. And you know, they didn't have those over the top moments, but you enjoyed, like, even you look at the Bad News Bears that didn't make the countdown. They had the, you know, almost grounded in reality, and that made it almost funnier because these were guys that you really could hang out with. That's a big part, I think, of sports comedies, is if you want to be part of that team.
Yeah. I was thinking of Bull Durham, too.
Yes, you another know, good one, it, yeah.
That kind of fits that same kind of 80s-ish right. mold that you're talking, late 80s and into early 90s.
Yep.
So, yeah, I'm glad that we kind of had a firm delineation for this set of movies because, like you already said, you know, sports can mean a lot of things, different things to different people. And some people take it very seriously. And for some people, it's just a diversion from kind of the doldrums of everyday life. And there are a lot of really good, serious sports movies out there. You know, Field of Dreams and The Natural and, you know, some of the others that you have talked about. Any Given Sunday, I thought was really good when I saw it 30 years ago now or however long ago that was. So limiting ourselves to sports comedies, I think was a really good move because, I mean, A, you're able to a little better compare apples to apples, but B, again, sports comedies can use the sport as kind of the building block for telling character-driven stories. And I think that differs from sports dramas that are really about kind of the dirty, nitty-gritty ins and outs of professional sports, about the pitfalls, pratfalls, you know, of the professional athlete, of the, you know, moral sacrifices that it takes to be a successful either athlete or executive in the professional sports world. Right. You know, you go off on a very different set of stories, and sports comedies just use sports, which we all already know about. You know, even people who aren't sports fans are familiar enough with sports to allow that to be, you know, the bread that our sandwich is built on. And again, you know, I keep going back to it, but I just think Major League does every one of those things exactly right. They all had the bread to start out with. It's sports and it's a comedy.
Right.
But the way they filled it up, you know, this was a very satisfying, you know, piece of cinema that, again, isn't challenging. But is that what you want from a sports comedy, to feel like you really?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that we'll get into that when we start talking about Slapshot. And that's a unique film that you don't see quite repeated. But as far as these two movies go, what we can do to kind of decide the winner is I'll do a brief argument for The Longest Yard. Okay. And if you want to give a brief argument for Major League, whether you want to root for it or not.
Sure.
And then we'll just vote. Now, so if you're in the chat right now and you've seen both Major League and Longest Yard, or if you've seen one and you just have a preference, you can put your vote in the chat right now and let us know how you feel. And we'll, you know, see if we need that tiebreaker once we get down to this. So briefly, as far as Longest Yard goes, as far as why I think it deserves to win over Major League, is like I said earlier, it was an originator of this kind of genre. It did break ground. There's so many things to like about it. I grew up watching it. You know, granted, I saw like the edited for TV version first, and it wasn't until later I saw the adult version. But even seeing the edited for TV version as a kid, it had those lovable characters, and the story itself was great. I thought that the concept of the cons playing against the guards was a great goal setting in a film. And every movie you have to have, what is your goal? What are you trying to overcome? And in this case, it's quite simply to beat the guards. You know, there's other things that get in the way. You have the conflict with caretaker getting murdered and crew maybe being framed for it and causing pressure in the final game. I think one of the things that's unique about this film is I've watched a lot of other sports films, and they spend a lot of time in the football game itself. I mean, nearly 45 minutes of the last part of this film, and you don't see that very often. You will see snippets of the actual sporting events, and they'll sum it up. Even Rocky, that spends a lot of time in the final matchup, they have the montage where, okay, we showed you the first and second round. Now we're going to quickly go through 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Now we're going to go to the last round. And Longest Yard isn't like that. And what I really thought, compared to Major League, if I'm doing a compare and contrast, is I thought the finale of the sporting event, I know that you have problems with the overall ending of Longest Yard, but the finale of the sporting event, I felt like it was a real game and that there was a lot on the line with the final play. The fact that it comes down to a yard run out and they do it in slow motion and it's very dramatic. I thought that it just culminates the buildup of a great game. You have this whole thing where they start out good, then they get down by a ton of points, and then they have to come back. So you get this roller coaster of emotions. So I think that Longest Yard, you know, deserves to be considered the winner of this battle for that reason. So with that being said, I'll turn it over to you to argue for Major League.
Yeah, and so obviously I enjoyed the Longest Yard. We voted for that. It was a unanimous winner in that matchup. I think what Major League does that's a little different, and I would propose better than Longest Yard, is Major League has a levity to it where the Longest Yard has a certain heaviness to it. And it's not that levity or heaviness is better or worse, but when I think about, you know, I want to watch a comedy and I want to watch, you know, a sports comedy specifically, that I'm not going into it for necessarily for the challenge. I'm not going into it to kind of reimagine what my feelings on justice or race relations. So there are times where I want to be challenged by a movie, or I deserve to be challenged. I just think in this specific regard, I left the two movies enjoying both, but feeling like Major League had the same set of pros, a common enemy. You know, they're kind of getting the shaft from this owner, but even that's a little more lighthearted than getting the shaft from a warden of a prison who's threatening your life. You know, this was just different. And so I think for me, that's kind of where my mind goes, is we're talking about sports comedies, and it just feels to me like Major League checks all of the boxes of what a sports comedy ought to be than I think The Longest Yard does. So that's where I'm at on that. Now, we've already got a vote in the chat.
We did. Zvi Hirsch has voted for The Longest Yard.
Is your vote for The Longest Yard, or were you just taking a devil's advocate approach to...
It says plus one, The Longest Yard, so I think it is for The Longest Yard.
No, but I mean for you, for me personally.
Oh, for me. Well, so I was going to listen to what you... Yeah.
Concretely voting for Major League for this one.
I have to admit that I do like both films quite a lot. I think... my heart is with the way that Longest Yard is constructed. I do, granted, there is some heavy moments in it. The Burt Reynolds character to me, when I compare Burt Reynolds and Tom Berenger, that is a bigger character. When I see Caretaker as the second compared to Corbin Burnson, I'm like, yeah, you know, if I compare the cast one against the other, I love Major League, but yeah. I think overall I would vote for Longest Yard. So.
It's probably a better movie. If you just ask me which of these is a better movie, I probably vote for Longest Yard. When I try to kind of distill it down to, you know, what are my interests in watching a comedy? What are my interests in my preconceived interests in, you know, well, tonight I'm not going to watch Schindler's List. Tonight I'm going to watch a sports comedy. I think that's where the tide kind of shifts a little bit.
Right. Me. Yeah.
But it looks like unless we get
another
very quick votes, or at least one.
Yep. Looks like the longest turn.
I'm going to end up on the short end of this one.
Yep.
So let's feel great.
It's not bad.
Now I know how you felt all these times.
This is actually the first time the audience has sided with me. So I will say that. But I don't think we've only had to go to the audience vote twice. I think this is the third time. So
yeah, that's right.
I will say, I agree with you as far as one of the things that's brilliant about Major League is that it is unintrusive. It is something you can put on and just enjoy. And to me, that it's very difficult. Choices again. Well, we've already made a decision, Mike.
No, Mike.
You've already made a decision. If you vote against The Longest Yard.
Mike, weren't you just saying that Major League was a much better movie?
And you vote for Major League, we're right back where we started from. So that's all I can say about that. But yeah, so I think that we got to move on. We got to move on.
Man, he was late.
But, you know, Mike, if you want to vote on the next one, the next set of our final four films, which
he ain't going to need to vote on this.
You don't think so?
I don't think so.
Oh, well, it'll be interesting. We've got two uniquely different films, but are both great sports comedies. They wouldn't be here if they weren't, and they're loved by audiences. So you can vote now. If you're in the audience and in the chat, and I'll say it several times, for either Slapshot or Happy Gilmore to see in case we do not agree which one is the better film to get to the final two and to our final. So we'll start. We don't even have to start with one or the other. We can just talk about these films. Yeah. They're uniquely different. Happy Gilmore being a mid-90s comedy that is pure Adam Sandler. I mean, we've talked about it when we had it on The Battle. It is an enjoyable film for so many reasons, and I think it's the Adam Sandler driven film. And then you find out that Judd Apatow wrote a lot of it. So you have that sentimentality about it as well. I think one of the things I liked about the Judd Apatow writing, you can see when you've got somebody else reining Sandler in, because if you have a pure Sandler movie, you get like the Western he did for Netflix that was just god awful. Or Jack and Jill, or He's My Boy, you get these real, or Don't Mess with the Zoltan. There's so many where he's not reined in. He's a very good talent, but the thing with Sandler is if you don't pull him back a little bit, he's just
there to have fun.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And so that's what it's going to be like you said, unless you've got good writing or someone on set, you know, who can suggest different ways of playing a scene or the character. But of all the Sandler characters, and just think of all of them, at least comedy wise,
yeah,
Happy Gilmore as a character,
yes,
has the most heart, I think, than the Billy Madisons, maybe Big Daddy, you know, it
right.
could be argued here, but he is a down on his luck person with a good heart. And it's not one of those things that requires some sort of long character arc throughout the course of the movie. He's always a kind-hearted person. He's just doesn't have the talent to follow through on his dream.
Right.
And he's not willing at the beginning of the movie to let that go. He will, you know, how many times he got cut from the local hockey team he keeps trying out for, and they make a joke about that, and even through the first third of the movie, it's still all of this is built around maybe he can find a way back into hockey, but he's not ever a mean-spirited character,
right?
You know, it's quirky and it's funny, but that Judd Apatow influence I think is seen there,
right?
It's difficult for me to objectively watch Happy Gilmore because the movie came out when I was a senior in high school. And I think that, like a lot of people, we will give an extra 20% buff bonus to movies that fall in those prime 17 to 25 time of our lives, we had all the free time in the world, Greg, and you could just call your buddies and watch a movie, and you'd be hanging out, you know, when I had an apartment or a dorm room, and all your buddies would be watching the movies together. And those are things I don't do as a 47-year-old, or that I didn't do as a 37-year-old, or, you know.
Right.
And so I think that they have a...
Oh, without a doubt.
A sentimentality to it. And it doesn't just have to be Happy Gilmore as a specific movie. Just most of the movies that I saw in that time, I'm going to air...
Oh, I agree.
Towards those.
I when
you
I was
know what that's like.
Yeah, when I was in high school, you know, in the 80s, the mall was the thing. You know, we always went to the mall on the weekends. And in those days, the multiplexes and even large screens nowadays, they're not in the mall anymore. They're outside and now they've got their own thing. But these things were inside the mall. So you'd go to the mall, you'd shop and you'd go to the food court and then let's go see a movie. You'd spend all day there with your friends. And that was the high schooler thing to do when I was in high school. We did it every weekend. And those movies that I saw from the period of, like, say, 85, 86 through the time I graduated in 88 are, if you put any one of them on, I have such a ingrained likability factor. I zero in. And I can name just a few that are really important to me in my lifestyle. Beverly Hills Cop 2, who I saw in the theater. I would watch it right now if I could. Untouchables with Kevin Costner, saw in the movie theater. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, saw in the movie theater with my friends. You know, and the Naked Gun movies, saw in the movie theater with my friends. So those are definitely, it does have that factor and it can influence you one way or the other. But I will say this regardless. I think Happy Gilmore, I saw it, you know, I was a grown man with a, did I have one child at that time? Yeah, I had one child and one on the way at that time. My daughter was at three or almost three at the time. And so watching it, I don't think I went to the movies to see it. I think it was one of those that where when you have young kids in the 90s, you went to Blockbuster. And I think that we just rented it. And I remember watching it at home and laughing my balls off, thought it was one of the funniest things I'd ever seen. So as a sports comedy, it does have a lot. Like you said, he's not an unlikable character like we've had in the others. He does have his anger issues where they're trying to rein him in, and they're trying the marketing, you know, that tries to get him under control so that, you know, that he can, you know, do well. But it's a really small thing that it doesn't make him over likable. If it does anything, it makes him actually funnier, because the scene where the head of the PGA is watching him on TV and he's just the constant bleep outs of the curse words is one of the funnier scenes in the movie.
This is also a common, maybe not plot device, but it's a trope at the very least, where you put it kind of like we did with the Beverly Hillbillies, where you take a certain class or type of person and put them in a new environment and, you know, how foreign everything is to them. So him going from amateur hockey to the stuffy country club, you know, champagne and caviar world of professional golf, you know, that's a very good catalyst for some of this zaniness that you're talking about.
Oh, for sure.
Or some of this, you know, how's it's the fish out of water, right?
Yep.
And so, but like you said, you know, we're lucky because the character, the flaws that he has are personality flaws, but they don't inhibit the enjoyment of the character.
Right.
Like, you know, we often see in other types of films. So, yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned the mall, because it feels to me like with music, with pop culture, and this is common for you and I, even though you're significantly older than I am, it feels like there was more of kind of a singularity of culture at the time.
Yeah.
Because there weren't as many outlets as kids today have. The music was kind of what you heard on the radio. You'd really have to go out of your way to find your local indie darlings.
Yeah.
You know, you'd have to really go to, you know, an obscure college radio or AM radio to find stuff that wasn't the music of the day. The same with films, right? I mean, and especially before things like Blockbuster, what was in the movie theaters is what you and all your friends watched. You didn't have a group of friends who only liked French art films. You didn't have a group of friends that only liked nature documentaries or whatever. All of your friends watched the same things. Now, right. Whether they liked it as much as you did or not, you know, yeah, was still different. And now with the Spotify and streaming and TikTok and, you know, curated playlists or playlists that you can build around your own personal tastes, right, and things. And I am not saying that one of those is better than the other. It was just, I think it would be difficult for like my 15-year-old daughter, Zoe, to understand kind of the cultural singularity, zeitgeist that everything was back in the 80s and the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
Compared to today. So, yeah, me and all my homies, we loved Happy Gilmore. And I had never really probably at that time heard of Slapshot. And I watched it for the first time a few weeks ago. And I was blown away by that movie.
Yeah.
I mean, and I remember talking in that episode about, there is some, we had just come off of the AFI top 8 with like Raging Bull had that grittiness to it.
Right.
And that was kind of a 70s, maybe early 80s film. Slapshot has that grittiness to it, but it kind of met the 70s as a cultural time right where it laid, where the Rust Belt was in decline, where even the scene that you're showing right now, Paul Newman standing in front of the factory, you know, not only are the factories closing, but they're polluting and they're causing acid rain. And, you know, it's Detroit and Cleveland and Pittsburgh. Yep. It's rusted out cars. It's, you know, the Bronx is on fire. It's just, there is a griminess to the 70s, the economic depression, the state of kind of geopolitical affairs, hostages in Iran. There's hijackings of airliners on TV. There's, you know, it's an over. Now, I didn't live through that as a kind of impressionable either teenager or adult.
Right.
But it felt to me, and I feel like you confirmed for me, that Slapshot really did a good job of taking everything that was going on in that area and at that time and allowing the viewer who was not alive at that time to feel exactly how depressing it was, how anxiety-inducing it was.
Right.
You know, just the hopelessness, and that was amazing for a quote unquote comedy film to put me in that place. I was blown away by that movie.
It's a level above Longest Yard, even though Longest Yard came out 3 years earlier and it had a sense of realism, but Longest Yard clearly defines itself as saying, we're trying to have fun here. We are putting a little bit of grounded, you know, kind of social issues in there because we want it to affect how our characters react. But Slapshot is a microcosm of what life was really like for the lower middle class in the 70s. My father worked in a steel mill, And I remember Great Lake Steel. It was right behind our house. Then there was train tracks, and then there was our house. And I remember, I don't know if I mentioned it during the podcast, waking up because, you know, we couldn't afford air conditioning. We were lower middle class. And so I would have my window open to have the summer breeze come through. And I would wake up with flecks of metal on my chest. Messed up my teeth. These are porcelain veneers. That's why my teeth are so beautiful. But the steel and the pollution messed up my teeth. I remember like going to sleep at the orange glow from the steel mill as the molten steel was being poured. And it would be these runoffs of these big, huge glows. Now, that being said, it was a brilliant time as well. It was a very simple time.
Yeah.
But everybody was kind of in the same thing together. When I see these characters in Slapshot and you see them at the bar and you see them interacting with one another, it reminds me of the grown-ups that I knew in the 70s, how they interacted, the beer they drank, the way they carried themselves. It's so authentic, it's scary. Then you add an interjection of really, because again, people that are watching the podcast and that haven't seen Slapshot, first of all, rent it, stream it, whatever you can do. Go watch this movie. You will enjoy it. But there are people that haven't seen it are probably going, well, this isn't even a comedy. But yes, it is.
Yeah, it is.
So when you get to those humorous points, it's kind of like when we talked about Godfather and AFI's Top 8. One of the things that makes Godfather so good is it's not violent all the time. It is a great character study, a great drama. And then when it's violent, it has this massive impact because it hasn't been violent for 30 minutes and all of a sudden, bam, something happens. It's the same thing with Slapshot in comedy where it's telling this good story and then something funny happens and it's the impact of the comedy, like the announcer in the booth, which again, we talked about Major League with Bob Uecker and the announcer. Yeah. The announcer in Slapshot, very similar stuff. The organist and everything like that. It's got these moments of realism that make you laugh because you start to care about the players of the team. And it just builds and builds. And then, of course, when they interject the Hansons, the movie to me, as far as a comedy, doesn't work without the Hanson brothers.
Yeah.
Because then it's just a straight drama. You introduce these three guys that are just uncorked violence on ice, but they're so childlike. Again, like we talked about Randy Quaid being childlike and being likable. The Hanson brothers are so childlike that they're lovable brutes. They're just unbelievable. Yeah.
Listen, I don't get mad if I leave the keys in the car running and, you know, one of the kids jumps in the driver's seats and drives it through the garage door. They're just kids, right? That's my fault. And that's how I kept feeling about this. And I just want to go back just briefly, because I just, like, it can't be understated the desperation that you feel as an audience member watching, that I felt watching the movie. Mm. Everything has kind of a gray cloud over it, and they picked the perfect sport to use as a backdrop for this, because hockey in its nature, and especially before the professional sports of the last 15 years, that has really gone towards money making, just how much money can we make forever until we can't make any more money.
Yeah.
And then we'll find a betting partner and make more money. But hockey, amateur hockey, in these rundown rinks with blue collar spectators, you know, you can imagine them with their metal lunch pails and their coffee.
Yeah,
you know, my thermos. Dad has had a Stanley, big green coffee thermos that he would take to work.
Back when Stanley wasn't for middle-aged soccer moms, it was for friggin' men that worked a friggin' long ass hard ass job.
We didn't have a coffee machine in my office, you know, and so I just brought, and so. This movie doesn't work the same if it's all of the things we already discussed, set where it's set, in the time it's set, with the characters, but they are trying to win a golf tournament, or hockey was perfect. And even the hockey scenes they show, the ice is uneven
and dirty,
and the boards are in various states of disrepair, and the equipment looks old and beat up. I mean, no detail was overlooked in creating an atmosphere. And of the four movies that are our semifinalists, it put me in a exact place and an exact time and an exact frame of mind more than any of the other three.
Yeah.
On purpose. Happy Gilmore wasn't trying to do that to you. Maybe The Longest Yard was, and Major League, meh. But I was in from the opening scene and wish the movie was 30 minutes longer.
Yeah.
And I guess I would just say Happy Gilmore having the built-in advantage of being a movie that I saw as a junior or senior in high school with my friends, with that singularity of culture at the time, and Slapshot affecting me the way that it did, given all of these other reasons for me to personally enjoy Happy Gilmore. I mean, that's going to be my vote. It's Slapshot times like 1,000.
Well, you know what? So here's the thing. The one thing that I'll say about Happy Gilmore as we move on is, as a sports comedy, if you want to have friends over and like have some beers and put on something that you can enjoy as a group, Major League is another one like that.
Yeah.
You want to put something on, have a few beers, have it on in the background so you can laugh every once in a while, or sit and watch it with friends. That's what it's for. Slapshot is not the type of movie you watch with a bunch of buddies. You can watch some of the Hanson scenes. But there's a lot of moments in Slapshot where if you're in a group of people and you're having beers and you're trying to have a good time, that movie's not meant for that. You have to temper.
You'll miss something.
Yeah. You don't get the plight, because there's a thing that I pointed out when we covered Slapshot is what I find so interesting about it is hockey, like you said, is the perfect sport for it. But the audience, the crowd, the citizens of the town, use the hockey team to get rid of their angst over their economic plight. And as the team starts winning, you see their spirit start to rise. Their aggression level starts to rise. So as the team is being aggressive, the fans build up and are aggressive, and they're being more like the teams don't want to come there because they're afraid of the fans. And it has this great parallel of explaining how a sports team is connected to a town. And that Major League does it a little bit with the Cleveland Indians. Nobody comes there, and then as it gets built up. So it's got it a little similar, but not as deep emotionally of that connection. So the final scene with the parade is the most appropriate way to end Slapshot, because there's optimism there and you still know things are bad, but they've just won it. And there's so many like cities like that, like, well, you talk about the Rangers win a World Series. You haven't had, and it lifts a lot of people up that are connected to that team and have been connected to that team for years. When your team hasn't won anything in decades and they pull off a massive upset victory, it's one of those things as Americans, it does, no matter what the economic plight is, it lifts your spirits and gives you hope for another day. And I think Slapshot encapsulates that perfectly, where the two. I did want to mention something, though. We were talking about the mall thing. I did want to point out, it is sad that the current generation doesn't have those experiences of being able to go with friends to the movie theater. And some do. Some still do. I'm not saying no, but it's so easy now to wait for streaming. It's so easy to just maybe go with one or two friends. One of the things my son was doing when he was at his last duty station that I thought was really, really cool, and it was nice to hear, was him and his buddies would get together for and have a few beers and watch any random Nicolas Cage movie just because they're so unhinged.
Yeah.
And regardless of if they were good or bad, they were going to enjoy the spectacle of Nicolas Cage. And so it's nice that that's still kind of happening in my son's generation.
Well, you must recognize that that's your, at least partly your influence on him.
Oh, sure.
You know, him having a dad who's so passionate about movies, and you've talked before really poignantly about why you're so interested in movies, in your upbringing. And so that's got to feel great, and it's got to be kind of a neat thing that you can look at your son and say, oh, well, at the very least, my love for movies is something that's passed on. We often, at our age, even though, again, you're significantly older than I am, you do start to think about what are the things that your kids are going to remember about you and what aren't they. And, you know, this is a big part of your life, and you've got a son who has made it an important part of his. That's really neat.
Yeah. I think that one of the things, like when we're doing this podcast and when I do my football one, at the very least, no matter, if this grows into something phenomenal, these videos will be out there for on YouTube and for my kids and for future generations. And
it's already phenomenal. The only people who are missing out on it is everybody in the world, basically.
Well, I will say this.
You're not missing out on anything.
We are up over. So the good thing is, like, as far as like the YouTube videos, we get maybe 40 views a week as far as the live streams, which is nice. But we're up over 100 a week on Spotify, which is very nice. I don't know if that's subscribers, because I won't pay the extra money on Castos to find out how many subscribers there are. It's like $30 a month. I'm like, nah, I can just see my streams and I'll be good. So there are people listening to it, and we want to thank, real quick before we move on to our final vote, we want to thank all of our listeners that have joined us. We've only been doing this a couple of months now. This is only our second full category that we've done, and we've had people like Mike Florida that has been here with us. Clarissa has come back from, is from the Jared Goes to the Movies podcast. V. Hirsch has said really great things about us. So we have regular audience members, and it's nice to hear from you and see you guys each and every week. So please keep coming back. And like Mike Florida says here, that's awesome, guys. I keep telling friends about it. Thank you so much, Mike, for promoting the show. Yeah, definitely tell your friends, recommend it, because we're having a good time here. That's what this is about. If you have a love of movies, we want that debate to not just be Eric and I. We want the audience to be as much a part of this as we are. So you guys are always going to be our tiebreakers. We're always going to reach out to you if we have a poll as far as what category we're going to do next, because we want you involved. So real quick, while I'm on that subject, you can see on your screen, if you're watching the live stream on YouTube or Twitch or Facebook Live, you can email us with any questions or just category ideas, movie votes at boxofficebattles@gmail.com. You can also check us out on Twitch at Box Office Battle Pod. And you can look at our YouTube live stream each and every week at Box Office Battle Podcast. We got another old buddy in there, Vinny Cataldo's checking us out. So, yep, good to see Vinny in the chat. So, I think
Vinny was in like middle school when we first started hanging out with him on Jared Goes to the Movies, and now he's a doctor or something. I don't know. It's like really that we've been at this a long time, Greg.
Well, I think I first guested on Jared Goes to the Movies as far as like the five questions thing was like 2019, 2018 maybe. And then the pandemic hit, and that's when I started doing the dress up thing on those. My wife said the other day that I need to start dressing up for our podcast because that was my thing on Jared Goes to the Movies. And I said, well, the thing was with Jared Goes to the Movies. The first time I did it was for like Raising Arizona. And I thought it would be funny if I wore the same shirt and did my hair. And then it was like, all right, what else can I do? And I really got it from Gickler, who did the
kiss pulse makeup.
Yeah, the kiss makeup. And I thought, that's awesome. People that come on there to do the five questions should be the movie. So then I started doing the Tommy Chong, and we did Up in Smoke. And it was just fun. It was nice. It was fun to go and get. I have tubs of costumes now that I'll never run out of. I could open my own costume shop after doing that for Jared Goes to the Movies. But But yeah, so yeah, it's good to have that crew here. I will say this, we are doing next weekend a Halloween special. And so I may or may not be dressed up for the Halloween special. We'll just have to, we'll see. And we'll talk about that more here in a minute. Vinny says, yeah, he was a freshman in college when he joined Jared Goes Movies. Now he's 25. Time flies so fast. It's crazy. Mike Florida, costumes are amazing. Appreciate that. I had a lot of fun doing those. And maybe we'll bring that back for future episodes here as we go forward. So I think going into this final, to get to the final four, I think the vote's simple. I think it's elementary. Love Happy Gilmore, but I think we both agree Slapshot is the entry into that final four. So it's kind of funny. If you look at our bracket right now, the two movies that made it to the finals are two 70s movies.
It's wild,
go
dude.
Go figure. Yeah.
So academically speaking, I often rely on you for kind of the academic eye on these things. I mean, are the 70s generally regarded as kind of a transitional golden era of movies or storytelling, movie making? Is there a giant difference between 50s and 60s movies and movie making to 70s into the 80s? I mean, yeah. Inform us a little bit on what that.
I've mentioned it before, but it was the 60s, you know, the late 60s when you had the Haight-Ashbury and you had the rise of the hippie movement, or just the beat movement in the mid 60s was where it kind of really started. And you had guys like, Stanley Kubrick started to make movies at that point. Francis Ford Coppola had started, you know, these were all film school students. And then you had, you know, Easy Rider came out and no one had seen anything like that. Bonnie and Clyde came out, was an ultra-violent gangster flick that really pushed the boundaries. And I think in the 70s, like, you get The Godfathers, Dog Day Afternoon, Serpico, so many good, Taxi Driver. Scorsese comes on the scene and makes all these brilliant films in the 70s. They evolved more later in the 80s and 90s, but those 70s ones have a certain vibe about them. I love 70s cinema because it was completely unhinged. They were letting directors do whatever they wanted. So I think when you look at our two finalists, I think the reason we like them so much is because they took chances. And so even though these other sports comedies, including, we loved Major League, we loved, you know, I loved Caddyshack, you did not, but Major League, like White Men Can't Jump and Dodgeball, the two finalists we have right now, Longest Yard and Slapshot, both had a little bit extra, if you want to say, compared to the other sports comedies that we dealt with. Now, getting into those two and deciding between those two, I don't even know if we have to debate.
There's a superficiality that's going to come with comedy movies.
Yeah.
There's a superficiality that's going to naturally come with movies that you make about sports because they're already a big part of our lives. We already know everything about sports. And I already know everything there is to know about comedy. It's why I hated Caddyshack so much. So there is a superficiality built in to sports comedies. We want it to be that way because otherwise they're not comedies, or otherwise you're using sports for something it shouldn't be used for. And in this case, it's to give a comforting background to the story that you're trying to tell. But then, lo and behold, here come our two finalists have such an extra depth to them. It's like, I mean, it's impossible to overstate, I think, just what these two movies out of the eight do that the others don't do.
Right.
But it's also, for me at least, impossible to overstate what one does that the other doesn't. and it's put you in a time and a place and a mind frame that anyone who's been on Earth long enough to become an adult, you know what it's like to feel like you're at your wit's end.
Yeah.
You're out of options, that despite your best efforts, it feels like the world is conspiring against you. Through no fault of your own, the economy has tanked. You're out of a job. You know, the market crashes and all the money that you save for retirement is gone. A lot happens in this life that can feel like you got kicked in the pants.
Yeah.
And that's just life. And you know what? Eventually we'll all just die and it won't matter. And they'll put a 2-paragraph obituary in the newspaper about, hey, you were born here. You had this many kids and grandkids. You worked at this place and now you're dead. And that's the story of your life.
Yeah.
But slapshot between these two really elegantly crafted, gritty movies.
Right.
Just does that to such an extent that I feel like we could be talking about it the same way we talked about Godfather. Yeah. In that what else is there to say about a movie that is this good? What else is there to say about a movie that makes you feel this way? What else is there to say about a movie that takes the care to treat you as the viewer like an informed, actual human,
right,
that understands what these characters are going through? And it's slapshot times 100. It takes nothing away from Longest Yard. I didn't vote for Longest Yard in the last one.
Yep.
But I'm not bitter about it like you were about Casablanca. I mean, about Citizen Kane.
And Caddyshack.
You were so mad. You almost made us quit the show. We're not doing this anymore.
What are you talking about?
If I don't win, we're not doing it. That's what you said.
No, I didn't say that.
No, you didn't say that.
No.
But
yeah.
You know, I don't have any problem with Longest Yard. That, you know,
yeah,
I voted for that movie in its first round matchup. Yep. It's just, sadly, it's just not, to me, on the same plane as Slapshot. And honestly, I don't know that there's ever going to be a sports comedy that could take you to a time,
right,
a place, a feeling the way that movie did. What say you, Greg?
Well, I agree with you 100%. And one of the things I'll add to that is that when I first watched Slapshot when I was younger, I enjoyed it. I loved the opening scene, you know, with the talking about the penalty box. And it's just a great opening scene. It sets the tone for the whole film. And then it's this balance of humor and drama that is so effortless that you never get bored, because as soon as it gets too heavy, something funny happens.
And that's life.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it was one of those things, like, I had seen it before, but when we watched it for this podcast, I actually, you know, sat down and just really absorbed it. And I appreciated it 10 times more than I ever had. There's a movie, if you haven't seen it, with Sean William Scott called Goon, that is another great hockey movie. I absolutely love it. This Goon is close, and I think it's very inspired by Slapshot. But this Slapshot is in a whole other, like you said, a whole other league by itself. It reminds me of my family. Like I said, the people that I watched growing up, it reminds me of my dad. And I didn't have a great relationship with my father. My mom and dad got divorced when I was 5. He lived up the street from us, so I would always walk to his house when I had to visit with him and everything like that. But he worked at a steel mill. This was the economic times we were in. So it reminds me of a lot of those things. And yes, so maybe nostalgia comes into play, but it's not just nostalgia. It is the depth of writing to balance those heavy moments with these really funny ones. So you really, if you watch it, if you've never seen it, it is something that you should watch, you know, maybe with one other person or by yourself, just to get the experience of it. It is a great film. So I agree with you. I think Slapshot is the winner of the best sports comedy that we've ever seen. And I think it's deservedly. So I don't think too many people would disagree with it. When we first announced that this was the category that we were going to do, I had people texting me and going, oh, Slapshot.
So, well, and see, when you announced the eight, I probably in my mind thought that this was going to be the one I was going to hate, that I was going to think it was overrated, that it just, you know, oh, ha ha, Hanson Brothers, ha ha, hee hee. But it was like, as we've already discussed so much, obviously more than that, I'm really surprised. I was very pleasantly surprised at how much it to me, it was as pleasantly surprising as Singing in the Rain was in our last matchup, yeah, where, yeah, I just thought, what in the world am I going to get out of a 40-year-old hockey movie? What in the world am I going to get out of a musical from MGM's golden era? You know, and I mean, they have both just knocked my socks off. I agree with you. If you've not seen it, I mean, you couldn't get more of a endorsement,
yeah,
from me, and I know from you. It's one of those, like, you gotta laugh so you don't cry,
yeah,
type feelings. It's just, man, it almost seems unfair because, yes, it's funny, but it's crafted in a way where it would stand up to any quote unquote drama,
yeah,
movie, especially if that drama felt overly manufactured or kind of drama for drama's sake, because this is the real. This is a real movie. It might as well be about real people in a real town, you know, in a real time, like you said, that you grew up in.
Yep.
It reminds you of those people. You know people like that. You know people who went through it. You went through it. If you care at all about the history of kind of industry in this country, then you already know kind of what the background, the setting is for the movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, it relies on using hockey as a metaphor, as a device for pushing the story along. It gives our characters room to react to what's going on around them in a arguably productive way.
Yeah.
It gives the people of this town, and I would equate small town hockey, especially of this era, to what I see. I'm a big European soccer fan, English,
yep. Same.
Soccer fan, and everyone watches the Premier League. It's on TV. But when you see what these smaller teams mean to these communities, like, we have a minor league baseball team here.
Right.
People do go and watch the Frisco Rough Riders. I don't think anyone here really cares a whole lot about the Frisco Rough Riders. You'll see a couple players who make it to the big leagues, and you'll say, I remember watching them when they played, you know, whoever.
Right. Yep.
But no one really cares. But people care about their small Grimsby Town soccer team in England,
yep,
you know.
Yep.
And that anchor to the community is really felt in this film more than any of the other films as well, is that it means so much.
Right.
It was the perfect sport for the perfect movie to tell a story about the perfect time and perfect place.
Yeah.
You guys, it's Slapshot.
It, without a doubt. And so, yeah, it's like, if you ever seen the show Welcome to Wrexham, that talk about the Wrexham, mm-hmm, how the town's tied in, and Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney bought the club and have been building a winner. And ever since watching that show, we follow Wrexham and, yeah, watch as many matches as we can. Yes. So it's excellent. So, yeah, without a doubt, Slapshot. And I didn't know that going in, that this was going to win. I looked at the eight films and I liked them all. So it's very interesting that it did win. So I think it's well-deserving. Didn't expect it. When I watched it again, I realized how much, how impactful the film was. So glad that it did win. So that's another battle down for box office. Two battles down, and we're going to keep going. Now, next week, I actually got a comment from Zvi Hirsch before I announced what's going to happen next week. Longest Yard has a soccer remake with Vinnie Jones called Mean Machine. And yes, it does. If you've never seen it, yeah. Very good film. I do like that one, Zvi. I really do. So, yeah, good mention on that. So, now, going into next week, we have a special announcement. We are not going to do an eight-movie battle. We are just going to do a special Halloween episode on the 29th of October, next Tuesday night, 9 o'clock, same time we try to do these every time. Now, right now, these are the four films. This is subject to change. I can guarantee you that Shaun of the Dead, Zombieland, and Young Frankenstein are practically locked in. There's a lot of votes for Shaun of the Dead. So I know that one's locked in. It's 51% of the vote right now. Zombieland is sitting at like 30. Young Frankenstein around, you know, in the 16s. Tremors is out there. That was actually recommended by Zvi. But after we did that, and I put out that I'm only going to leave this poll open for 24 hours. We got a ton more votes today. And movies like Creepshow, which is considered a horror comedy, and one of my personal favorites, Dale and Tucker versus Evil, has been put to the list. So that could supplant Tremors. What we're going to do is we're going to leave the poll open until the end of, like, say, 9 o'clock tomorrow night. So that's when I'm going to close it down, and then we'll have our definite four movies. But we're going to do a Halloween special of the best horror comedies. Again, like I said, Shaun of the Dead, Zombieland, Young Frankenstein are in there. We're still have up in the air for the fourth one, but we'll see how that goes. And the thing that everyone should know, I announced it on Facebook today, our good friend from Jarrett Goes to the Movies, Sean, is going to be here. Big Sean is going to be in the studio, and he's going to help be our tiebreaker for the Halloween special for these four films. And we're excited to have him.
Hold on. Oh, no.
Is it Frenchie? Lieutenant Steve?
Hi, guys. It's me, Sean, and I'm
sure
excited.
I sure
to see you guys.
Kermit the Frog.
Next week. So, why are there so many songs about rainbows?
Yeah, dude, you're going to do this.
Sean, man, it's so good to see you.
Yeah, okay. You're not going to. He's not going to come on the show if you're going to do that shit. So, anyway.
He loves that bit.
I know. But he's actually, I'm good friends with Sean. I've hung out with him several times. I know you have as well because you did the podcast with him. But very good, knowledgeable about films. He didn't talk a lot on Jarrett Goes to the Movies because he was doing his thing behind the scenes. And yeah, exactly. There was a lot of people in that room. So yeah, he just let everything happen organically. So Sean is, I've talked to him a lot about films. He is a very knowledgeable individual. And I'm excited that he'll be a part of this next week. So tune in to Box Office Battles with Greg and Eric next Tuesday night for our Halloween special.
Spooktacular.
Oh my God.
Yes.
He got that in. All right, guys. Thank you so much for joining tonight. Again, like I said, you can email us at boxofficebattles@gmail.com. Tell your friends about the podcast. And we are going to see you next week.